running multiple venues with multiple facets, it's challenging, it's tricky, but it allows me to see things I wouldn't normally see.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Ballarat is one of the great regional centres in Australia with a thriving hospitality scene. But what's it like running a huge venue for cultural, corporate and social events in a regional setting? Konstantin Putkin is the executive chef and food and beverage director of The Goods Shed, Nolan's and Boom Time Dumplings in Ballarat. Konstantin, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. Yourselves?
I'm good. It's good to get you on the show. You've got a pretty big role there. Things must be pretty busy.
Yeah, it's been pretty full on since we opened in November last year.
What's things like? You've sort of cooked all over the place, but what's it like in a regional centre like Ballarat? Is it different, the sort of offering that you need to consider?
Yeah, look, it's obviously, it's one of those things that obviously there is a expectation of certain elements when it comes to food and offering in regional centres. Ballarat, yes, regional, but it's really only an hour and a bit up the road from Melbourne. So I think there's a lot of stuff that we can do probably up in here in Ballarat that you probably wouldn't do down in Melbourne and vice versa as well. They were a big country town at the end of the day, but we do have a lot of Melbourne people who live up here as well. So it's a strange little town, a great little town. Food scene is definitely hustle and bustle. There's some fantastic places here. But you still have your great little counter mill pub on every corner as well. So, yeah.
Your role encompasses many sort of offerings. Tell us about the vastness of the Goods Shed and all the different offerings and sort of what you're doing there.
Yeah, so as a whole, the Goods Shed is essentially a big functions and event space. It's got like a little theater. Right? We've got space for 300 sit down in our Lydiard Hall offering. A couple of smaller areas called carriage rooms where we can do another 100, 120. We can do up to like 500 stand-up canapé style. So that's kind of the functions and events side of things. We've got itinerant spirits as well, which is run from independent perspective essentially. So we've got Craig and Brad in there who are the owners, but we cover their food program for them. We've also got Nolan's, which is our modern Australian restaurant. So kind of split it into, if that makes sense. So obviously we go a upscale kind of cafe offering, think a Yarraville kind of cafe, morning and lunch kind of thing. And I hesitate to use the word fine dining, but more of a relaxed dining kind of feel in the evening. And the last little place under my scope is Boomtime Dumplings. So we kind of base it on a Hong Kong style street food offering, very dumpling focused, a few different little wok dishes. So yeah.
Give us a sense of the scale. How many staff does it take to run an establishment like this? And how do you manage so many different offerings?
Look, it's been a challenge and it's obviously made me think outside of the box with what I do on a day-to-day basis. But in terms of staffing, obviously my role is both front and back of house. So under everything, I've probably looking about 30, 35 staff. That's just the retail side of things. Functions is a whole other beast unto itself. But no, it's just about knowing my venues inside and out, what I do, how my staff operate, placing the trust in them to get the job done and yeah, just rolling with it essentially.
I'm going to explore sort of what you're doing there in Ballarat in detail soon, but take us back to when you were young. What sort of role did food play for you?
Growing up in a Russian-Serbian household, food was obviously very, very big for us. Very familiar food focus, so big feasts, big meat on the spit, lots of potatoes, pickled vegetables, that kind of thing. So for me, always being in and around food was just one of those things where it's, I don't know if it was a natural transition into becoming a chef, but it was something that I was always familiar with. My first kind of after-school job was just scrubbing pots and pans at a little restaurant called Pierre Luc's Marble Brasserie back in Canada. And yeah, one day the chef there just said, it was like, you seem to have a good eye for detail and you're always paying attention and asking questions. Do you want to, I don't know, do this as a job kind of thing? And I was like, shit, why not? Let's go. So yeah. Kind of just really fell into it.
in those early years, what were the really sort of important people and venues that you worked for that helped you carve a path?
Look, I think the first proper venue I would have worked in that actually made me stop and think about food would have been Vivadi in Moscow under Anatoly Kon. He's in some circles known as like the godfather of modern Russian cuisine. So for me, it was a very eye-opening experience into the world of high-class fine dining and just understanding more about produce, proteins, and everything that comes with it, essentially. So the next step would have been Galvin at Windows in London. It was just, again, another wholly eye-opening experience of working insane hours, doing things that I just never really thought was possible with food. So
I want to just take a step back. Take us back to Moscow. What's it like working in hospitality there? And is there any sort of dishes that you remember quite well that you can take us through that sort of exemplifies your time there?
Look, so much caviar and vodka, it's not even funny. The amount of blinis I made there was absolutely ridiculous, to be fair. My background during my apprenticeship / traineeship was mostly seafood, so that was a skill that really crossed over for me. So a lot of shucking of oysters, a lot of doing fresh seafood orientated dishes. In terms of something that would really stand out, I spent a lot of time with the pastry chef Dmitry at the time. Very, very Russian name. But it was essentially a lot of opera cake, a lot of medovik, which is also known as Russian honey cake in Australia. But then just your classic little desserts like creme caramel brulee. It was very much a modern European, but with a big French influence kind of thing. So, yeah.
Tell us about your move to London. What sort of triggered that? And what was it like for you living there?
Insanity. It was something that was a fantastic experience. And I learned a lot about myself and what I could do as a chef and a human. But for me, it was, finishing up my time in Russia, going back to a English-speaking country and just really seeing what I could do as a chef and whether I was up to scratch or to find out really how far this career could take me, I guess. So, yeah.
You mentioned that you learned a lot about yourself moving to London. Tell us about what you were like and what you did learn from your time there.
Time management. Ability to get out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning to be at work at 7 a.m. and finish work at midnight and do the route through that. Just the ability to know what my limits are as a human and a chef and to realize that, hey, nothing is impossible if you put your mind to it, essentially. So, but for me, it was mainly about learning technique, learning skill, just learning bits and pieces about modern British and French cuisine that I'd never really knew and thought about. So yeah, for me, it was just one of those massively eye-opening experiences that really made me think like, hey, if I can do this, then this probably is the career for me. Because at that point in my life, I was very much like, hey, is this something that I want to do long-term? I'm still young enough to do something else. Like, yeah. So it was just to figure it all out and go from there kind of thing.
How did Australia first come onto your radar and how did the move come about?
Yeah, so my another part of my life, my ex-fiance was originally from Australia. And that kind of led one thing to another, moved out to Australia, ended up in Wagga of all places. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I guess it just kind of started off at a little place called the Roundabout Restaurant back in 2013. Had a very supportive owner there called Jamie, who just essentially gave me my first head chef role when I was grossly underqualified to be a head chef at that age, 24 years old. And I guess I kind of just figured it all out as I went and, yeah, built a bit of a name and a bit of a career for myself in this fantastic country. So, yeah.
What was it like going from London to Wagga?
Ridiculous. So I would have landed in like February 2013. And it was definitely a culture shock of being from obviously London, which is one of the world's great cities, the hustle and bustle of just everything that is London itself, to Wagga Wagga, which is, yeah, it's just, if you've ever been to Wagga, you know that it's just Wagga. It's one of those places which people either live their entire lives and don't really leave, or people go there for basic training or the Air Force or university. Obviously, Charles Sturt University is one of the best universities in the country for animal sciences and nursing. It's either your place where you live or a place that you transition through. So I don't know, for me, it was my first real taste of Australia and met a lot of great people, made a lot of great friends, played rugby for a few years there, and yeah, just learned how to not be overly bogan, I guess. So
you've been in Australia for over a decade now. What's been some of the really key venues and people that you've worked with as you built your career here?
Obviously, jumping into a head chef role at such a young age has shaped my career to a point where I've only ever really been a head chef in Australia. So for me, it's, it's just been one of those catalysts of working up and up, better venue kind of thing. Had some time off between 2014-15 just to really find myself, figure my life out, get healthier. I was quite sick for a bit there. But got on top of it and decided that I needed a big shakeup. So packed up my entire life as it was. And at the start of 2018, went to the Fleurieu Peninsula of South Australia. Worked for a lovely couple, Ian and Haley, who had a beautiful venue called Leonard's Mill in Second Valley. And really started the next phase of my career, I guess. So really getting into whole animal butchery, the real nitty-gritty farm to table, growing your own plants, herbs, garnish, working with local suppliers. Like, our beef came from the family farm 700 meters down the road. It was absolutely ridiculous. We had amazing Berkshire pork, which is 13 kilometers away. We had the best seafood from Cape Jarvis from a fisherman called Al. We had amazing chicken from Nomad Farms, which is like 49 and a half kilometers away from the restaurant. It was crazy. Their food philosophy was that outside of your staples, everything was to be from within 50 kilometers of the restaurant. So as a chef, it was just like, okay, this is a whole thing. Like, I've got a whole cow coming this week, obviously outside of my prime beautiful steak cuts. What the hell do I do with everything else? So it was one of those things where you learn, you research, you figure it out, you pick up new techniques. You really trust your senses, you network, you speak to your friends, your chefs, your colleagues and mentors and be like, hey, I've got this 500 kilogram beast that I'm sitting on. What in God's name should I do with this? So yeah, it was wild, absolutely wild.
What sort of impact did Leonard's Mill have on your cooking? And do you have some examples of your food from that time?
Yeah, look, it made me rethink everything that I knew about food, to a point where we were getting a metric shit ton of vegans coming down. How about I just figure out that I just become vegan for a month kind of thing. So that was something I did. And yeah, that in itself led me to a better understanding of vegan proteins, how to respect that side of things and get more creative instead of just doing a basic pasta or risotto kind of thing. So to the point where we were doing this awesome beetroot and chickpea Wellington of all things. So no, it was really good. It just made me step outside of my box and really understand, respect all elements, respect wastage, just respect the farmers and the effort that they put into it and just understand that this is their lifeblood. And obviously if we're going to do this, not make it a mass produced piece of shit, if that makes sense, like break it down and really respect the protein, respect the vegetable, respect what they're doing, and just make sure that the customer understands the story and the background and everything about it. So, yeah.
Tell us about winding up your time there at Leonard's Mill. Why did you leave?
So I got an opportunity to open Aura at the top of the Crown Plaza down in Hobart for Callous Hospitality. And anyone who knows me knows that I'm absolutely in love with Tasmania. It is my favorite place in the world. So to get that opportunity, it was just something that no matter how much I loved being at Leonard's Mill in South Australia, I just simply just couldn't say no to. It was just something that had to happen. So, yeah.
What is it about Tasmania that you love?
Look, the people, the produce, the scenery, the food scene, just everything is, it's a chef's wet dream, like, to be brutally honest with you. It's just amazing lamb from like a Littlewood farm. Sophie does strawberries as well. Then you've got the amazing guys at Soyoyo Tofu down in Jeepston who do some of, like, I personally hate tofu. But the stuff that they do, it's just like, holy hell, this stuff is phenomenal. Like, it makes you just really reassess what you know about food and just having the quality of produce you can have down there. And it's just like, holy hell, like, why wouldn't love everything about it? So, yeah.
Tell us about your time at Aura. Was it a different market, and did you approach your food differently there?
So, obviously, I had my newfound philosophy, which was very locally based, respecting food, et cetera, et cetera. So, that was something that I definitely wanted to carry across with me to Aura. And look, Alexia Callis absolutely supported me in my effort there and said, yep, anything that you want to do, we'll do it. And we just made an absolutely phenomenal offering at the top there. So, it was obviously Hobart's first rooftop bar and restaurant kind of thing. So, best views, well and truly. Used as much local produce as I could. I'm pretty sure I had something like 65 different suppliers, which was an absolute nightmare, but it was one of those things that we just did really, really well. Yeah, it was just obviously a lot of corporate clientele from the hostel underneath, but we gathered a good name for ourselves really quickly in the local scene as well. So,
how did you end up in Victoria?
I was working at a little place called Hallam's Waterfront, which is an icon of the Launceston dining scene, for a year before I came up here. Was headhunted and poached to go to a restaurant in Daylesford, which we won't talk too much about, and didn't go as planned, and unfortunately finished up my time there after 3 months. So I was now living in Ballarat going, okay, what now? But a couple of people that I worked with there worked at the Good Shed, made the introductions. I met Hatem, who's the owner and founder of the Atlantic Group, as well as the group executive Hamza. We loved what we were about. They brought me down to Melbourne, did a couple of gigs with them, and after the first little gig, Hatem's like, right, job's yours if you want it. So yeah, it was just one of those chance meetings that turned into an absolutely amazing time up here. So yeah.
How much has the goods changed since you've been there? What sort of things have you implemented?
So the retail side of things wasn't actually open. So the distillery itself opened in September, October last year, and the rest of the retail, so Nolan's Boomtime, started in November. So prior to that, it was essentially just running as a functions and event center that obviously Atlantic would run in their style. Obviously Atlantic Group is one of the biggest events caterers in the state. So they had this big, beautiful kitchen here, but no staff to really run it. So they're essentially sending staff up from Melbourne, produce from Melbourne, and that way. So obviously me coming on board was going, hey, we've got all of this stuff. Let's start doing this ourselves up here. Like, there's no need for Melbourne to start catering it. So it was essentially just taking a blank slate of a venue and rolling with it, to be fair. And as we got closer and closer to opening, let's start hiring more and more of my staff. Then we built a big, beautiful team that we all love and cherish and just rolled with it. So yeah, that's pretty much how we got to that point.
Take us through a big event. What does it take to pull together a really large event for a number of people? How do you get the menu right and consider all of the things that are important?
Yeah, so we've got a big, beautiful menu, which is obviously done by our group exec chef up in down in Melbourne. So everything that runs through that, we've got our own little local offering as well. But essentially, the client will run through, choose what they want. We'll do a tasting for them if they would like to go that direction. Obviously, we set up how we'd normally set up. We'd have our event order. We'd run through what we do. We break it down, we get our prep done into the lead up, and yeah, it's just as simple as you got 250 people, this is what that's on the menu. We plate it up, rack it up, get it out as we go. It's honestly, it's just like a big restaurant service, just more hands on deck and bang it out as quick as you can, with quality being the utmost thing involved. So yeah.
What's life been like for you in Ballarat since taking on this role?
Mate, I've absolutely loved it. Had never been to Ballarat before. Knew that it was obviously a big old gold mining town, and knew of Sovereign Hill. And I don't know, for me, it was just a great change to go live somewhere that was really nice, easygoing, relaxed, but I could still have a certain degree of professionalism in what I do on a day-to-day basis and bang out what I do every day. But no, for me, it's been absolutely phenomenal. I've had a chance to work for some amazing people, lead the operation here, and just do bigger and better things, and hopefully open up the Ballarat food scene to more awesome things moving forward. So, yeah.
Producers and the connections that you've fostered have been very important to you at the various venues that you've worked at. Tell us a little bit about the producers of the region and some of the ones that you work with on your menus.
Yeah, so Inglenook Dairy plays a big part for us. So all of our milk comes from Inglenook Dairy, our butter, our cream, just the stuff they do, their milk, their cream, it's phenomenal. It's absolutely brilliant. We've worked pretty closely with 1816 Bakery as well. So they currently provide all of our sourdoughs, any events that we do, they're our go-to with that. But the boys at Salt Kitchen Charcuterie, their bacon, their breakfast sausage, their take on prosciutto, their mortadella, oh God, their mortadella, it's phenomenal. It's just one of those things that you can just slice off and just continue eating and be like, oh shit, where did this 2 kilos go? It's just, yeah, look, the quality of suppliers in Ballarat has really, really surprised me. Obviously not knowing much about the Ballarat food scene or what you can really get around here, it's just obviously developing those relationships, getting to know the guys and going, hey, can we do this? They're like, yeah, absolutely, we can do that for you. And it's just the willing want to help you as much as humanly possible. It's just one of those things that I don't really think we see too much in big cities anymore, unfortunately.
Mm. Well, you've created an amazing venue there with multiple offerings. What's the plans for the next sort of year or two for you?
Yeah, obviously, tighten up what we're doing, solidify the business, move forward. We've got a big space that we're still, which is one more development to do inside. Just trying to knock down the exact direction that we want to roll with that. It's more than likely going to be brewery based. Obviously, Ballarat's got a massive brewing background in history. So I think that's potentially that the way that we're going to go, but we're still up in the air with that, with what we're going to do. But for us, it's essentially just solidify what we're doing in Ballarat. Keep serving the locals and hopefully they keep coming back, mate.
Your role is so multifaceted. What sort of advice would you have someone that might be stepping into a role with multiple venues from sort of running a single shop?
Trust your gut and trust your staff. If you don't trust your gut and your staff, then you're not going to go very far. I trust my staff implicitly. I know that the people that I've got underneath me are there for a reason. They do their jobs very, very well, and if you give them that rope to do what they need to do, they'll absolutely smash it out of the park for you.
Well, you're doing amazing things there. What do you love about what you do?
Just look, the diversity of what I do day in, day out. Obviously, running multiple venues with multiple facets, it's challenging, it's tricky, but it allows me to see things I wouldn't normally see. It allows me to not just be in there smacking pans every night, which I absolutely love doing, but it's the ability to improve myself as a chef, well, not just as a chef, but as a manager as well, I guess. Obviously, working in different environments. I actually had the opportunity with Atlantic Group to go down and run the Rolex Suite for Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. So in a regular environment, that's something that I never would have been faced with. So, and that in itself was absolutely incredible. So, yeah.
Well, Constantine, it's great to get you on Deep in the Weeds to hear just a part of your story. Please keep in touch and we'll have to catch up again soon.
Absolutely, mate. Thank you very much for your time.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.